Hi, and welcome to Lakeshore Update. I'm Dee Dodson. On this edition of the podcast, you'll hear the latest on the Kellogg Company teaming up with Strack and Van Til and the Food Bank of Northwest Indiana to address summer hunger among children in the region. Darian Benson reports the thought of going back to a pre-pandemic lifestyle is cause for anxiety for some people. And Chris Nolte has a conversation with Aaron Stoyich of Lake Area United Way. All of that and more on this edition of Lakeshore Update. Kellogg Company is teaming up with Strack and Van Til and the Food Bank of Northwest Indiana to address summer hunger among children in the region. The program, which began June 2nd, provides Kellogg's will donate one meal for every box of participating cereal purchased at any Strack and Van Til store. At the end of each school year, some children do have barriers to access the same consistency of meals that the school year provides. Summer food programs provided by the food bank ensures that children residing in households with limited incomes continue to receive nutritious meals during the break. At the end of the campaign, a donation will be made to the food bank. To find out more about summer hunger programs or other food assistance options through the Food Bank of Northwest Indiana, please visit www.foodbanknwi.org. You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dodson. Park officials have ordered an emergency ban on bulls at a Porter Beach due to fights and other disorderly behavior among visitors. The Times reports the alcohol ban at Porter Beach was announced last Friday afternoon and remains in effect until September 7th. The presence of park and local police will also be increased. The beach along Lake Michigan remains open to the public. Indiana Dunes National Park Superintendent Paul Labovitz made the decision after a rash of disorderly conduct, drunken behavior, harassment, and fights.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dodson.
The Hoosier Lottery is on track to break sales and revenue records this year. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brendan Smith reports that will deliver more money than ever back to the state.
The lottery's fiscal year runs from July 1st to June 30th, and last fiscal year, revenues only barely met what the lottery budgeted for, impacted by the early months of the pandemic. Executive Director Sarah Taylor says this year, however, the lottery is breaking records.
This ranks as the largest amount the Hoosier Lottery has ever returned to the state of Indiana to support our teachers' retirement fund, local police and firefighter pensions, and the lottery surplus fund.
The lottery is set to deliver about $368 million back to the state, while the private company that runs the lottery for Indiana will get a nearly $20 million bonus for exceeding the state's income goal. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Brandon Smith at the State House.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dodson.
Officials have approved the creation of Indiana's first virtual private schools, making them eligible to participate in the state's private school voucher program. The State Board of Education voted Wednesday of giving two-year probationary accreditation to online school plans for Geo Focus Academy and Faith Prep. Geo Focus Academy will be the fifth Indiana school affiliated with the Geo Foundation, which now operates charter schools in Gary and Indianapolis. Faith Prep plans to operate as a sister school to Columbus Christian Prep, an existing private school operating in Columbus.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dodson.
Community organizations and schools across Indiana will receive more than $120 million in grant funding from the state. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Jenny Lindsay reports it's part of efforts to support student learning after a massively disrupted school year.
The Student Learning Recovery Grant Program was created by lawmakers earlier this year in response to the pandemic. The Boys and Girls Clubs of St. Joseph County are receiving the largest amount of any one applicant so far at more than $7 million. CEO Jacqueline Cronk says the funds will support an amped-up after-school program starting this fall, including hiring at least 60 more people. Staffing, she says, is likely the biggest challenge.
There's a lot of excitement and enthusiasm surrounding this opportunity, but we need more people to join our forces to allow us to do that.
The grant funding will reach organizations and schools in at least 83 counties and fund programming until 2023. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Jeannie Lindsay.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Two young local entrepreneurs in Indianapolis are making a big leap. They're going from running a small convenience store to operating and owning a full-size grocery. It's set to open next year as a way to help residents of a food desert. And as Side Effects Public Media's Farah Yousry reports, it's also part of an unusual collaboration with a medical device company.
I think we got a couple more bags in the back.
On a sunny day, Michael McFarland and Marcus Williams are at the parking lot of a strip mall on 38th Street in Indianapolis. They're packing up bags of chips, canned vegetables, and diapers to deliver to a local homeless shelter.
Any more back there, Mike?
The two guys are in their 30s and have been friends for as long as they can remember.
We grew up together in the same neighborhood, used to go to school together, ride bikes, fix up cars, you know, just everyday friends.
That's Williams. Living on the northeast side of Indianapolis, he's seen how the area changed over time. Many grocery stores have shut down in recent years, leaving thousands of residents struggling. And that's a big problem, because a lack of fruits, vegetables, and other fresh food can contribute to ailments like obesity and diabetes.
Three aisles right here, which have canned goods.
So a few years ago, the two friends decided to start a convenience store to try and tackle the issue of food access.
Cakes, you got the sodas. In the back of the store was the fruits and vegetables, you know, tomatoes, potatoes.
But things were not easy at Wall Street Grocery. They ran on small profit margins, and they faced distributor and supply chain roadblocks. They could only get fruits on certain days, vegetables on others. It was hard to predict. Williams says it's more than just a job. It's a lifestyle.
You have to check the food every day, two or three times a day, turn it, spray it, flip it, check the dates. You got to stay on top of your distributors.
Now they're shutting down their convenience store. But they're not abandoning their neighborhood. In fact, they are the future owners of a 15,000-square-foot grocery store being built less than a mile away. Near the Arlington Woods neighborhood, workers are preparing a construction site. A family-owned Bloomington-based company is building a plant to make needles, catheters, and other medical devices used in hospitals all over the world. It's also spending $2.5 million to build a grocery store, Indy Fresh Market. Local organizations like Impact Central Indiana are pitching in with capital and inventory, too.
It was never part of our business plan to have a grocery store.
That's Pete Youngman, president of Cook Medical, a multi-billion-dollar medical device company. He says talking to community members, it was clear that food access was an issue. And things came full circle when he met McFarland and Williams. Once the construction of Indy Fresh Market is complete, it will be turned over to McFarland and Williams through a rent-to-own model. Youngman says having a local grocery store owned by young members from the community and not another big box chain makes it easier to cater to the residents' specific needs.
So they're committed to making space in the grocery store so that local growers that they know can bring their produce in the grocery store. They can do education programs to teach people about foods they may have never seen before. So we're partnering right now trying to figure out a way to ensure that if people are prescribed food as medicine, they can get that paid for at the grocery store.
Such efforts are much needed, according to Niyati Perik, a global public health professor at New York University. She says if the store can get residents to spend their hard-earned dollars mindfully, it can be a win-win.
It could be a grocery store could give incentives, right? The more fruits and vegetables you buy, the more free points you get to go and buy more. There could be very creative ways.
As McFarland and Williams empty their convenience store and give away the remaining food stock, they know a lot is riding on their plans. To help their community move forward, they have to make sure residents reap the benefits of the new, bigger store. For Side Effects Public Media, I'm Farah Yusri.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
As more and more Americans are vaccinated for COVID-19, some states are beginning to lift restrictions on gatherings. But for some people, the thought of going back to a pre-pandemic lifestyle is cause for anxiety. Side Effects Public Media's Darian Benson reports.
Miranda Tetzloff is a 25-year-old who has two pit bull mixes named Bub and Goose. She takes them on long walks for exercise, but she recently caught herself backing out of a hike because she was afraid of seeing other people on the trail.
Oh, it's nice outside. We've been in a pandemic and everyone's been cooped up in their homes. Oh, that means everyone's going to probably also be at the park. And so that just kind of terrifies me.
Tetzloff, a childcare worker, lives in a suburb of Indianapolis. There are still about 1,000 new COVID cases a day in the state, but the governor recently lifted the statewide mask mandate and ended restrictions on businesses. Daily life is slowly starting to resemble pre-pandemic times, and Tetzloff says that worries her.
I don't know what the next person's doing with their life. I don't know if they just got off a plane. I don't know, you know, what they're doing and how they're keeping themselves safe.
Tetzloff has been vaccinated, but is still overwhelmed when she notices people not wearing a mask or not taking social distancing as seriously as before.
It's just anxiety. I feel like that's like what I feel when I think about having to go to the park or like see other people.
Kevin Rand says feeling anxious about going back to pre-COVID activities is normal. He's a psychology professor at Indiana University, Purdue University, Indianapolis.
So given that many of us have been sort of, you know, staying at home or not doing the things we typically do for the last year, as we start to reengage in those activities, they're going to seem new and a little bit anxiety provoking.
He says these feelings are similar to the anxiety felt before the first day of school and are likely to pass soon.
Because we're going back to something we've done before, that predicts it'll be a pretty quick recovery to feeling normal again.
Rand says some people might experience anxiety for longer. If feelings extend for a few weeks, he recommends seeking professional help. And he says people will have legitimate concerns about their health.
There is still a pandemic going on, so even though, you know, we're making good progress with vaccinations and things like that, there is a health stressor out there.
That's the sort of thing that concerns Misty Asbury, an office worker for a utility company in Indianapolis. She's worked from home since the pandemic started and is hesitant to go back to the office.
I'm very concerned about going back into a workplace and working just because it is an office where you're in cubicles, so you're not enclosed in your own workspace per se. We have one break room for essentially 80 people.
Asbury worries about not being able to assess the cleanliness of the office. She says she is fully vaccinated, but is still erring on the side of caution, limiting public outings, and declining family gatherings.
I think people need to do a personal risk assessment.
That's Thomas Dzinski, an epidemiologist with the Indiana University Fairbanks School of Public Health. He says it's important for people to look at what they, and others, are doing to reduce the chance of catching the virus, especially as it mutates and continues to infect people.
So it's assessing how much risk an individual has. And then I think there's also the social responsibility that we all have a certain social obligation to help each other out.
Like getting vaccinated, wearing masks, and continuing to social distance. Asbury doesn't feel comfortable quite yet in going back into the world.
I'm anxious in a happy way to be around people, but I kind of think I want it on my own terms to be able to do that.
She'll finally feel safe when COVID cases and the positivity rate fall, and when everyone is fully vaccinated. From Side Effects Public Media, I'm Darian Benson.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Here's regionally speaking host Chris Nolte with a conversation with Aaron Stoyich.
The Lake Area United Way is working with a number of Northwest Indiana financial institutions to create what the United Way is calling their very first Community Savings Challenge. And with us to talk about the challenge is the Financial Wellness Coalition Coordinator for the Lake Area United Way, Aaron Stoyich, with us. And Aaron, thank you for joining us on Regionally Speaking.
Thank you, Chris. I know it is a mouthful, the title, and I appreciate being here with you guys and being able to share about the Community Savings Challenge, hoping that we can just get the word out to the community.
Well, this is a very important program. The entire topic is all part of financial education, which I think we all need a little of, no matter how much we know or in how much we've learned in school or learned in the College of Hard Knocks in life. We still need to get a little education, and this is a good way, and savings is a good way to be able to help get us by. Will you talk first about the setup for the Community Savings Challenge?
Yeah, absolutely, Chris. So we have at Lake Area United Way, we have a Financial Wellness Coalition, which is made up of financial institutions and other nonprofits in the area, and then some government entities that work on things like housing with HUD funding and things like that. So our coalition is working on making some strategies around building financial stability in our community. And so this was one of the strategies that came out of that. So what we're doing is we're encouraging community members. We're actually even including our partners, our employees at Lake Area United Way, as well as our clients that we serve at Lake Area United Way to save $250 over the next 6 months. And the reason why we are doing that is because we know that around 40% of people and 40% of Americans do not actually have $400 in savings that's fluid that they can access in an emergency. So we're just trying to help them get there.
I know that a lot of what the Lake Area United Way does as part of their goal is to help groups which are called ALICE families. Will you kindly explain for folks that may not be familiar with the term what ALICE means? And certainly this is a big part of what they need to know if they don't already learn it by the programs and initiatives from the United Way.
Yeah, I absolutely will. And thanks for bringing that up. So ALICE is an acronym that we use for research, but it stands for Asset Limited, Income Constrained, Employed. So what we're talking about is a population of people that have jobs. They might even have two or three jobs, but they are still unable to afford the basic necessities. So those are things like food, housing, health care, child care, digital access, so the internet, things that, you know, in our life today we have to get by. Even though they might be working more than full-time hours, are not able to access all of those things. They're living paycheck to paycheck. They're having to take on debt to survive. And so what we do in our Lake Area United Way program is called Level Up, is we try to help those individuals and those families to get better paying jobs. So we bring them into the program and they get a personal case manager who will help them to identify what it is that they even really want to do. They may have never been asked that question before. What job do they want to have? And then try to help them on that path to getting that higher wage job and then ultimately getting that financial stability, because we are then potentially having people with lots more money and much better paying jobs once they get those skills and trades. And so then we help them to figure out how to better manage finances.
I understand there's been a new survey put out by FINRA, which is a nationwide financial assistance group, as well as Saver Life. And tell us a little bit about the results of the study and how important it is, and certainly is very key to the Community Savings Challenge.
Yeah, so actually the 250 mark came out of that because I came across this study during some of my research. FINRA and Saver Life are both nonprofits that specifically work with those populations that are struggling financially but still working. And so they really, Saver Life specifically, is an organization that helps people to save money. So they do incentives and they give rewards and they kind of gamify their platform. You link your savings account to it. So Saver Life has the access to all the data. They've got about 500,000 users. So they pulled a subset of that group, and they found that people who had $250 in their savings account were seeing these really great benefits, things like having way more stability in their housing, so they were less likely to have moved over the last couple of years. People that had actually even $100 were less likely to have used a payday loan, a pawn shop. They were able to keep their lights on, and then they were also less financially stressed overall. So we picked that 250 mark really because we knew that it correlated with all these really great benefits.
Now, we know that obviously the coronavirus pandemic has caused a lot of problems for everyone in some manner or another. What kind of problems do the results of the pandemic, the impact of the pandemic, maybe I should say, will have for struggling families and trying to be able to save just a little bit and at least not even as much as you're hoping to do in the challenge?
Right. So obviously the pandemic just threw tons of people for a loop, especially with childcare. Because these families, a lot of them rely on that child care to be able to go to their two or three jobs every single day.
Mm-hmm.
And so Lake Erie United Way does have a child care program where we help subsidize families, so I will say that. But obviously, you know, times have never been harder for some people. And so another one of the reasons why our organization and our coalition talked about $250 is because we know that traditionally financial advice would tell you to put 3 to 6 months worth of saving away. And that could honestly just be a total non-starter for people because they don't think they can attain that goal. And so $250 over 6 months is around $10 a week. If you're getting paid every week or every other week, $10 or $20 to just pull out right away. It's important that you make it automated so you never even see that $10 or $20. And we really just hope that people can feel that they can attain this goal, that it's something that will benefit them in the long run because we know about all of these benefits with housing and avoiding those high-cost debts. So that's kind of where the $250 came from and why we're hopeful that despite the pandemic and all of the things that have limited them, especially in the past year, that's something they feel they can attain.
We're talking with Erin Stoich. She is the Financial Wellness Coalition Coordinator for the Lake Area United Way. The United Way has just created its very first Community Savings Challenge. It's underway right now through the end of November. And I know, Erin, that Lake Area United Way website, LAUW.org, has a special page talking more about the challenge and also has some interesting facts on there, too, and tips for people that might be having some problems in saving money at any particular case, not only for the challenge, but anytime. Will you tell us a little bit about the page?
Yeah, sure. So you can actually register, and if you sign up, it's free to sign up. I'll get your information, and then I'll be able to send out things to you as the 6 months goes on. If you need motivation or support, if you're looking for more tips, I'll just be kind of in contact as the 6 months goes on to ensure that people are getting the help that they need if they're stalling or things like that. And then there's some information on there. There's a link to that Saver Life and FINRA study, and there is some tips and tricks that you can go to. America Saves is a really, you might have even heard of it, as a pretty well-known organization that encourages saving as a campaign, and so there's some links to there. And then I'm going to be sharing things like webinars or different trainings that people can access throughout the 6 months as well.
I also understand, too, that the page also has information for people that maybe are not familiar with banking accounts and the like, and they can help through the United Way, help get connected to a community bank that will help them out.
Yeah, so we actually have a number of bank partners. So as I mentioned on our coalition, we do have representatives from various financial institutions in Northwest Indiana. So I will go ahead and just tout some of their amazing work. They're all volunteers, and they do this really because they care about our community. So BMO Harris Bank, Centier Bank, First Financial Bank, First Merchants Bank, First Midwest Bank, First Savings Bank of Hegwisch, People's Bank, PNC Bank, and Woodforth National Bank are all incredible partners with us, and they've all they've given me the information about their savings accounts that they have that are affordable and available for our community. So if people do not actually already have a savings account, and that's something they're interested in getting access to, I am more than happy to help them through that process, because we know that that can also be just something that could put people off from starting to save in the first place, is not having access to those safe and affordable accounts.
That's right. And that information, by the way, can be found on the Lake Area United Way website, which is www.lauw.org. It's a page that's entitled The Community Savings Challenge. And Aaron Stoich is the Financial Wellness Coalition Coordinator for the United Way on this particular project and others through the Lake Area United Way. And Aaron, thank you very much for being with us, and the best of luck on this program. We hope a lot of people take advantage of a chance to learn how to save if they're not familiar with it, and especially people that are struggling, and or they know of family members who are struggling, so they can get some financial help in a way that they probably never realized they could, by just saving a little bit every single week out of their pay to go into savings. Thank you for being with us today.
Thank you so much, Chris.
Regionally Speaking with host Chris Nolte can be heard each Monday through Thursday at noon on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM and streaming online at lakeshorepublicradio.org, where you can also find podcasts of the show when you click on the program link. For the latest in local news and information, tune in Monday at 6 a.m. for Morning Edition with local host Chris Nolte. Lakeshore Update is supported by the listeners and members of Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM. Podcasts for Lakeshore Update are posted each Friday on our website, lakeshorepublicradio.org, as well as on NPR One. Make sure you search for WLPR and select us as your home station. Music for Lakeshore Update was written and produced by bensound.com. For Lakeshore Update, I'm Dee Dotson.